Welcome to episode 53 of the Tax Professionals Podcast. In this episode, Stephen Hodson, Head of Indirect Tax at Entain, a FTSE 100 company, shares his experience of transitioning into his first in-house tax role after circa 11 years at Big Four.
Welcome to the Tax Professionals Podcast, the podcast dedicated to helping you improve your tax career. Here's your host, Jack Bonehill.
Back in 2017, an opportunity for Stephen to move in-house came up. At this point, he'd spent circa 11 years at Big Four firms, where he'd enjoyed his time and could see the clear career path that he was on. Progression is important to Stephen. He'd already been on secondment to in-house roles and didn't have a strong urge to move in-house, but this opportunity struck Stephen's interest. It was in a sector he liked, with the chance to broaden his business skills, but the decision to take the leap wasn't an easy one. There was a lot to think about. Would he still get the development he wanted? How would he find the transition? In this episode, Stephen shares with us what his thought process was at the time, why he decided to take the role, how he found the transition, differences to working in practice to in-house, and his advice to anyone considering the move to an in-house role. Timings for all the different sections can be found in the details section of this episode within your podcast player, or by heading on over to the show notes for this episode at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP53. That's thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP53. Make sure you don't miss out on any future episodes of the podcast by subscribing or signing up for email notifications at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/subscribe. The email notifications will give you a brief summary of each episode so that you can decide if you want to listen. Episodes are bi-weekly and are released on Mondays. As I think a lot of us tax professionals do, I often get a tap on the shoulder from recruiters. From this and my recent experience of hiring a manager in my team, salaries for us are skyrocketing. They just seem to keep on increasing and going up. If, like me, you're interested in knowing what you're worth in terms of salary, then get in touch with James from the tax recruitment company to benchmark what you're currently on. From his interaction with many different businesses and tax professionals, he has current knowledge of salary rates based on experience and specialism. You can contact James on 07768 252 252 at j.howell@thetaxrecruitmentcompany.co.uk or book a call with him via thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/salary chat. To benchmark your salary or discuss potentially available roles, particularly if you work in corporation tax, as he is currently recruiting for many roles in this area. You don't need to remember James's contact details, they're all included in the details section of your podcast player and in the show notes at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP53. Without further ado, let's get to the episode. Could you start off by telling us a little bit about you and your tax career?
Yeah, certainly. I've been doing tax for over 15 years now. I started down the route that a lot of people do. I joined one of the Big Four in a graduate scheme back in 2006, joined Deloitte, spent the best part of 10 years there, had a really good time, did all sorts of things during those 10 years, worked in different offices, different clients. It was really, really good. I also did a couple of secondments to clients, which was really valuable and served me very well later in my career, as I know we're going to talk about today. Then spent a year at PwC in a very similar role. So I left Deloitte as a senior manager, joined PwC as a senior manager, doing indirect tax for almost all of this time, although I did technically join Deloitte in a corporate tax role. And then after a relatively brief stint at PwC, I took the role that I've been in for almost the last 5 years now, which is head of indirect tax at a business now called Entain. It's been through a couple of different names in my time here, though it was Ladbrokes Coral when I joined, which is the name that's probably more familiar to listeners because those are two of our biggest consumer brands. It was then GVC and it's now Entain. And we're a FTSE 100 betting and gaming business. We've got just under 3,000 betting shops in the UK. We've also got a large online presence and lots of different consumer brands. So not just Ladbrokes and Coral, but things like Bwin and Gala Bingo and all those kind of things as well.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've roughly had 10 years or so before you made the move to your first in-house role. I mean, when did you start thinking about moving to an in-house role? Was it kind of like an immediate thing or was it over a period of time?
It wasn't something I really consciously thought about, if I'm honest. I think when I was at Deloitte, I was really fortunate to be able to do a couple of secondments to client tax teams. One of them was actually a full-time secondment. So it was almost like I had actually joined a client team and I got to experience what it was like working in an in-house team without actually making the leap completely. The second common I did was not full-time, but also gave me similar experience. And in that second one, I was in a more senior role in an in-house business as well. And having completed those two secondments, I never really thought I would go and take an in-house role because I'd been working in Deloitte for so long and had no reason to think about in-house. And I'd always just assumed that I would work my way up through practice. So it wasn't really something that I actively considered because I thought I'd already had the opportunity to learn about what in-house is all about and develop different skills and experience through those secondments. So I don't really need to go in-house. And I suppose people are wary about in-house being different to practice, at least in the sense that you don't have the same career path laid out on a piece of paper. Although I do think there are some misconceptions around that. So the reason I actually made the move in-house is pretty much because I was contacted after I'd joined PwC. So I'd been less than a year at PwC and a recruiter contacted me and said, someone's given me your name. Apparently you've got experience in the gambling industry, or at least you've had clients in the gambling industry before. And did you know that Ladbrokes and Coral, two of the major UK operators, have just merged? And as a result, they're restructuring the tax team. And there's an opportunity to join as a head of indirect tax and set up an indirect tax team in this newly merged business. And that was just too good for me to resist because it was an industry that I liked. It was an opportunity to build a team from scratch. And when I went in and had my first interview and met the guy called Charlie, who was my boss then and is my boss now. We've been here together most of those 5 years. I thought this is ticking all the boxes. This is a great opportunity to do something different. But I hadn't really thought about going in-house. And I do think that it all just kind of fell into place.
Yeah. So kind of what went through your head at the time then when that recruiter contacted you, straight away did you feel like it was something that you wanted to do, or were you just kind of trying to explore a bit more about it in the first instance?
Because it ticked those boxes, I was immediately very interested because I knew that it was an industry that I liked and that there was clearly an opportunity. And I suspect in-house roles are very different from one business to the next, possibly a bit unlike practice roles where people think they're a little bit more interchangeable between, you know, people often talk about, well, one big four is similar to another big four, and they might say similar things about accounting practices at other stages of the, you know, lower tiers as well. But no, I think, yeah, tricky, Jack. I just basically went for it. I don't think it didn't really require much thinking about on my part. I think if I'd been contacted about a different role in a different industry that I didn't have a great deal of affinity for or experience in, then I would have had to think a lot more about it. Or if I'd been contacted about an in-house role where I couldn't see an opportunity to progress or build the team, then again I would have had to think a lot more hard, a lot more about it, but that wasn't the case.
Obviously it is different, isn't it, moving from a practice role to an in-house role. I mean, although obviously you accepted it and you kind of felt like that was the right thing, did you have any reservations or concerns at all about making the leap?
Yes, I suppose you never know what it's going to be quite like. I was fortunate, as I said, that I'd completed a couple of secondments whilst I'd been at Deloitte. So I had more of a feel for what it might be like working in an in-house tax team. But I also had that safety net that I could always go back at the end of my secondments. So I think in terms of reservations, I certainly had to think about, well, does this affect my career planning and my, you know, 5 or 10 year plan and what my future path might be? Because in practice, it is, as you know, very common to think, well, every year or two, if I do the right things, if I'm continuing to develop and serve clients effectively and bring on the people beneath me, then I can keep moving up the tiers. And some practices, of course, are extremely hierarchical in that sense. You have lots and lots of different grades and subgrades and so on. And that can be very valuable to people. And you know they're going to get quite the same thing in an in-house role. Possible exceptions might be incredibly large businesses where the in-house team is almost bordering on a mini practice in itself. But that wasn't the case at the time that I was making the move. So that was something I had to think about. As it happens, the business that I joined has just got bigger and bigger very, very rapidly over the last few years through a combination of M&A and organic growth. And so that has actually meant that the role and the team and the opportunity has got bigger. I have had more and more development opportunities. It hasn't stayed the same every year. But you don't know that when you join, although you can kind of look from the outside and try to get an idea about it. So I have to say, yeah, I thought about that. And I suppose the other area of uncertainty I had to bear in mind is that this was a brand new tax team that was being formed. So whilst my boss had joined, he was in the process of then creating a team. So I was joining something that was not fully formed, and therefore I didn't know quite how it was going to pan out. But sometimes you just have to take a leap of faith, I suppose.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, did you do anything at all to try and almost make sure that you would still be able to develop and progress your career? Because that sounded like it was still important to you and was a bit of a concern at the point of moving.
It's really, really important to me. And one of the exercises that I did as part of my recruitment process, so my second interview was with the CFO at the time. And well, even with my first interview, one of the things I did to prepare was I created a few slides, and I basically thought about, if I had this job today as head of indirect tax of this business, what are the things that have happened in the last 12 months that I would have been working on or that I might still need to think about if I take this role? And what are the things that are coming down the track in the next 2 or 3 years? A combination of tax changes, business changes, team changes, and what will that look like? And I was doing that exercise partly to work out if I would like the role and if I think I could be successful in it. But it also had the advantage of showing me that actually there was going to be an awful lot to deal with in this role, and that the business was likely to face a number of changes in tax law. It was likely to get bigger and more complicated. And therefore, that's what gave me the assurance that there would be opportunities to learn and grow and develop. I also knew that there were going to be certain things I would be forced to do in this role, such as hiring my own team members, and not just hiring my own team members, but thinking about the team structure, devising the job specifications, that kind of thing. And that also made me think, well, there's clearly a development opportunity there for me, because I had the opportunity to do some hiring in my Big Four roles, but it's a lot more structured when you're hiring in those kind of large practices, because they hire so many people and they train so many people. It's a little bit different when you're in a much smaller in-house tax team and you have to devise those roles for yourself. So I could clearly see when I did that exercise that I was going to have lots of opportunity to grow and develop. And I'm just personally a big believer in continual learning, training, development. Anyone who works in my team, I hope, will agree with that. And therefore, I thought, well, if I'm going to be able to build my own team, I also quite look forward to the opportunity to create our own little training program internally, which is beneficial to everyone, including myself.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose if you're in a Big Four environment, you wouldn't have had the opportunity to do that because it's already been laid out by like a specific team that dealt with the training of people.
Yes, I suppose unless you worked in that training team, then that's probably true. And I think the other area where I've really enjoyed learning and where I think I've grown as a tax specialist since moving to my current role, which I hadn't anticipated as much before I joined, is learning about other taxes. I'm an indirect tax specialist, have been an indirect tax specialist for over 95% of my tax career. And I hadn't anticipated how much I would end up working with direct tax specialists, employment tax specialists, and so on. And I also probably had underestimated to what extent I'd end up working with other professionals, not tax people, from whom I could learn quite a lot, whether that's regulatory specialists or lawyers, those kind of things. And so actually, it's proven that I've been able to gain even more skills and learn even more than I could possibly have anticipated when I was doing that exercise I just mentioned.
Yeah, I suppose then really you were thinking more outside of, I suppose, a little bit to do with the indirect tax knowledge, which you already would have probably had to a pretty good standard anyway, but you were thinking more about, I suppose, your softer skills and your development in those areas, really. But it sounds like you've also had the opportunity to, I suppose, expand technical knowledge, whether it's tax, whether it's regulatory, outside of tax and similar as well.
Absolutely. The other thing that's been really fantastic is the opportunity to work a bit more internationally. The business is a huge international group. And what I've noticed is if I went back 5 years to before I joined, it's just the way practices are set up, the way these international networks in the Big Four and other accounting and tax practices are set up is that you have individual member firms or country specialists. And if you're going to receive a query from a client that relates to a jurisdiction that isn't where you've got the experience and training, then typically you'll refer that to a specialist in another country. Being in-house, the way our team is structured, we are highly centralized as a tax function, and we deal with, therefore, queries from all over the world. And that's actually also a great learning and development opportunity. And one of the things that I quite enjoy is being able to learn about different jurisdictions. Obviously, we do need to rely on local advisors, whether they're tax specialists or lawyers. But you get to pick up a lot of things about how taxes differ from country to country. And I think being able to do that comparative analysis between different jurisdictions can help you to understand your own specialist jurisdiction even better. And I've really quite enjoyed that too.
Yeah, it sounds like really, like, I think this is more of a Big Four thing than, say, maybe some of the other accountancy firms that are of smaller size, but you become so specialist in a Big Four that you only really get to work on a few technical pieces of tax rules. And it sounds like this in-house opportunity for you is really giving you that chance to almost get like more awareness, I suppose, of the other taxes. Like, you might not know them in great detail, but it's definitely broadened your overall tax knowledge to understand potential issues and then maybe even at least where to go to get the answer to those things.
Yes, I'd certainly agree with that.
Yeah. So how would you say that you actually found that transition then? Let's say the first year or even the first few weeks that you had this in-house role, how did you find that?
Well, the first thing that I noticed after I joined is that for at least a month, I, at the end of every task, would get my notebook out and start making a note of how much time I'd spent on something. And it took me a month to realize I didn't need to do this anymore because there were no more timesheets. And it was a strange to think that because I'd been doing timesheets for 11 years or so, I literally couldn't write an email or do a piece of research without trying to write down how long it had taken. So that's obviously been a while ago now. So I've definitely transitioned away from that. So that was the first thing I noticed, actually. The next thing that dawned on me after moving in-house that felt very different to being in practice is that there was no more review process, in a sense. So because I was the head of indirect tax, I was I'm the most senior indirect tax professional in the business. It's not like I write an email and then someone else takes a look at it before it goes to the client. In this case, the client could be any one of a number of internal stakeholders rather than an actual third party, as you would have if you're in practice. And it obviously took some getting used to realize that if I came to a conclusion, if I had an opinion, if I had a memo setting out the indirect tax position on something, that was it. I could, of course, bounce some ideas off my boss, but he's not an indirect tax specialist, but he's a very sensible guy. But really, there's a lot more pressure to be the person who the book stops with. And that took some adjustment. But I think overall, it can be a good thing, because it can make you a better advisor and a better tax specialist, because you are forced to, I suppose, maybe it's a bit more like if you were a partner in practice and the buck stops with you, you are the one who's signing off on that piece of advice. And so I felt that was quite useful in terms of forcing me to grow a bit and commit to my opinion on something. And it's become second nature now, of course. And I've also learned that there are other ways of handling that. So in some, you know, it's in practice, you get used to the idea that everything is very heavily caveated before it goes to a client because of the risk of being sued for incorrect advice or that kind of thing. I suppose it is a bit different in-house. You're unlikely to be sued by one of your colleagues for giving an incorrect piece of advice, although obviously you still don't want to do that. But you learn other techniques for understanding where the risk lies and what's reasonable to say and so on. And so that's something I noticed. And then I suppose the other thing that I had to get used to was just talking to lots and lots and lots of non-tax specialists and actually working out who they were, where they fitted into the business, what their teams were responsible for, and what the touch points were between their teams and tax. So that's people like procurement specialists or lawyers or regulatory specialists or investor relations or corporate development, all these kind of different functions, as well as just other finance colleagues, accountants in various different divisions of the business. And I found that there was a lot more effort needed, but in a good way, to work out who all these people were and to get in touch with them and start to build relationships with them. Because my experience in practice in the Big Four was that it was a bit easier to know who was who, because you normally were dealing with a certain set of professionals in your specialism. And you go in-house and suddenly you spend half your time dealing with non-tax people, at least, certainly my experience.
Yeah, that does make sense. I mean, just coming back to the point where you said, like, there's no review process anymore. So that must feel like there's a lot of pressure on your shoulders to make sure you're right. I suppose, how do you deal with it to make sure that what you're saying is 100% right?
I think it comes down to risk management. And one of the things I've discovered is that there isn't necessarily always a 100% right answer, which might sound a funny thing to say in some circumstances, because we're all used to the idea that certainly if you're in a country with the rule of law and clear legislation and a sensible tax authority, then we should all just be able to open the legislation and pick out the answer. And so someone in the business comes to me with a question, and in theory, I just have to open the legislation and answer the question. Now, obviously, it's not even that simple in a jurisdiction like the UK. Otherwise, there wouldn't be tax tribunals and all that case law. There obviously are areas of uncertainty. And I think that's what it comes down to, is there will be times when I get asked a question which is brilliantly simple, and because of my years of experience working in indirect tax and the knowledge of the business and the group structure that I developed over the last few years, I can say with absolute confidence what the answer is. So someone says to me, well, we're moving some goods from the UK to Ireland next week. What are the VAT implications of this in the UK and Ireland? I can answer that fairly straightforwardly. But we get much more complicated questions as well, of course, where actually there might not be a particular 100% correct answer. And so it comes down to this risk management process, which might involve considering a variety of different things. And it will be from straightforward things like, what is the value at stake here? So if someone tells me there's a transaction with a little bit of uncertainty about what the tax treatment will be, but there's only £100 involved, well, obviously, we always want to get the answer right in every circumstance. But we've also got to be sensible about how we use our time and resources. So I'd be more willing to make a judgment call on something like that. On the other hand, someone comes to me and says, we have a transaction we're about to enter into. It's £1 million at stake, or it's £1 million transaction, and therefore in the UK, maybe that's £200,000 of VAT at stake. It's a lot less likely that I or other people would be willing to make a judgment call on that. We need to know the answer, because it's unacceptable to the business, and I'm sure to HMRC, if we don't get something right on that scale. And so I've got used to the idea that you can't be always 100% correct. You can strive to do the best. You can put in place the processes and controls. But sometimes you won't always be able to get a 100% right answer. Other aspects of that risk management approach will be things like saying, well, in that case of that £1 million transaction, what's the best that I could possibly do? How much time do I have to answer the question? And can I get an opinion from an advisor that will give me something to rely on in that situation? And that's often a good approach if time allows. Or can we bounce the idea around the team? And you end up with a bit of a review process there. So when I started 5 years ago, I was the only indirect tax person. But now there's a handful of us. And that's great, because actually, whilst we don't have a formal review process like you might have in the Big Four for some of those questions, I do now have the opportunity to bounce something around a group of indirect tax specialists and come to a sensible consensus view. Other things I might do in the case of these risk management questions is I might try to find some HMRC guidance that I think points one way or another. And ultimately, I suppose what any tax professional needs to do at the end of this is come to a sensible conclusion and then document it. And that's also something that we're all obligated to do by the professional standards. And so if we do make a judgment call, or there is a degree of uncertainty, it's a case of taking some sensible steps and then documenting why a decision was reached in the way it was. And that documentation might just be based on internal conversation, or it might be referring to something from an advisor.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. When I was like earlier on in my career, I was that person that even if it was just £100, I'd still want to get 100% the right answer. And I kind of didn't like the idea of almost taking that judgment call as you're talking about, because the risk from a tax perspective is so low, even if you do get it wrong. I suppose even from a practice perspective, obviously, because I still work in practice, sometimes if a client gets in contact with us and there is only a few £100 worth of tax involved, and it's going to cost them more money for us to give them the advice to find the correct answer than it would for them to just get it wrong. Sometimes we even just go, well, we'd have to go away and do some research to make sure we're 100% right in this, but it's probably going to cost you more than this, and we think this is the right answer. Even we do that from our perspective sometimes as well, and give them the choice. Some clients will obviously want to pay for it because they want to make sure it's right. Some clients will just take the quick answer and go with that. So it sounds like that's something that you guys do as well at your side.
Maybe it's something, yeah. Sorry, Jack. Maybe it's something in the personality of people who go into tax, because I certainly, earlier in my career, had the same mindset as you, which is, oh, it's only £100, but there has to be a right answer and yeah, I need to get to the truth. But you have to become a bit more pragmatic.
Well, yeah, I suppose it's time at the end of the day, isn't it? Because if you spend like 3 hours researching a £100 query, that's £300. That's 3 hours that you're not spending on the £1 million one. And which one's more important? You're limited to your time, aren't you? So makes sense. It's interesting to hear that actually from your perspective, how you kind of deal with that. I suppose a lot of people who work in-house will probably have the same issue, and maybe some of them don't even have the same luxury as you in that you've got a team to now bounce ideas off as well.
As a reminder, to benchmark your salary, find out what you're worth, or discuss available tax rules, get in contact with James at the Tax Recruitment Company on 07768 252 252 at j.howell@thetaxrecruitmentcompany.co.uk, or book a call with him via the taxprofessionalspodcast.com/salary chat. All these contact details are included in the show notes for this episode at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP53.
Obviously, when you joined, it sounds like you were the only indirect tax person in the business. And now it sounds like there's more of you. So what has been the evolution of your tax team?
It's been a story of tremendous growth. And that is because the business has got much bigger and more complicated quite quickly. And that's a combination of the business's own activity to get bigger and better through M&A and organic growth. But it's also because the area that I work in, or certainly the area that's growing in the business, is our online activity. And from an indirect tax perspective, that's an area where governments are doing a lot of work. There's been this sense for a number of years, which I think has just been accelerated post-COVID, that governments feel they're not collecting enough tax in general from technology and digital services businesses. But in the case of VAT and indirect taxes, there are some obvious cases where the legislation has fallen behind, and therefore governments haven't been collecting VAT on certain online services, and they have slowly decided that they need to do that. And I think it has been happening more and more post-COVID, as there's been this shift towards the online world. And so that's what's driven it. And tax is also just a huge, huge cost for the business that I'm in, just the nature of the business and the regulatory environment that we have. So we've gone from when I joined, I was given the option on day one to hire someone else to join me. That took a bit of time. But by the end of my first 6 months in the business, there was two of us. That was great. And that kept us ticking along for a little while. But then a few months later, we were acquired by another business, GVC. And with that, the business got overnight a lot more complicated. And that's because the business I joined, Ladbrokes Coral, was very UK-centric. The business that acquired us, GVC, was much more international. And that immediately meant dealing with more returns, more jurisdictions, and a bigger and more complicated corporate structure spanning lots and lots of different countries. And so as part of that acquisition, I ended up acquiring another team member who'd come from GVC. So that made us three. But then we rapidly started to realize that the business was too big to manage, was just that size of team. So by the end of that that period, so by the end of 2018, a couple of years into my role now, we'd grown to four. Today, we are a little bit bigger than that, although we've reached a stage in our life cycle where we've got some team members starting to leave now. So I'm doing a combination of hiring new roles and hiring replacements. But essentially, the team has pretty much tripled in size in less than 5 years. And it's great for me, because it means that the experience I've had and the opportunity I've had in my role has just grown. And, you know, this goes back to one of your earlier questions about what's it like when you go in-house and what, how do things work in terms of progression? Well, I think there are so many different in-house roles because there are so many different businesses out there. And there might be some businesses that stay static for 5 or 10 years. And therefore, perhaps the tax team will stay static for 5 or 10 years. And there won't be the same opportunity to grow and to gain new experiences and develop further technical skills or broader technical skills. But that's not the case where I've been. Because of this rapid growth of the business, the tax team has grown accordingly. And it's not just my team, the indirect tax team. The way we're structured is there's essentially three sub-teams. So my boss is the director of tax, treasury and insurance. I'm the head of indirect tax. We've also got a head of international tax and a head of compliance and reporting, which is a combination of UK tax, some tax governance issues, and also employment taxes. And all of these sub-teams have been growing as well because of the way the business has grown.
Yeah. Do you think that's a bit of like a trend for in-house teams generally? Do you think they've all gotten bigger like yours have? Or do you think it really does depend on the business?
I think in general, there's probably been a trend, just anecdotally, over time for in-house teams to get bigger. And I think that's probably because there's probably this evolution that you go through as a business, where I think my sense is if you went back a few decades, you would have no in-house tax people and businesses would be largely reliant on outsourcing, most businesses, to Big Four or other practices, because it wasn't necessarily considered appropriate or required to have an in-house tax person. It would probably be, well, as long as we've got some accountants in-house, then they can liaise with the advisors. And I suspect what's happened over time is the world of tax has got more complicated. Businesses have become more international and they have started to think, CFOs have started to think over time, actually, why are we spending all that money on professional fees for tax? Why don't we just hire a tax person? But then, of course, once you hire the first tax person, then you might end up hiring the second tax person because that first one starts to realize the extent to which there is work that needs to be done from a tax perspective. And also you do this trade-off between how much are you spending on professional fees versus how much would it cost to employ another tax specialist. And I think that's probably the general trend, I would imagine. And I think for my specialism, indirect tax, we're probably slightly behind the curve compared to maybe some of our direct tax colleagues, because I imagine as this trend has taken off, probably the first tax specialist a business hires is a corporation tax specialist, because that's the tax that most finance people are familiar with. That's the one that investors think about. That's the one that people see in their statutory accounts and so on. And then over time, you maybe as a business start to branch out into other types of specialists, depending on your tax profile. So where I work, indirect taxes are a far greater cost than direct taxes, just because of the way that governments choose to tax retail and online gambling. And that's a combination of, we have a more complex VAT profile, but we also have to pay lots of gambling taxes, which are indirect taxes. And so in our business, it would make sense to then say, well, we need an indirect tax specialist. But then, as I say, that person then realizes, well, I need an indirect tax manager or assistant manager. And it grows like that. And then, of course, you've got your specialism, Jack, employment taxes. And I think, again, probably not as high up the pecking order as corporation tax people or international tax people. But sooner or later, a business realizes, well, I've got hundreds or thousands of employees, and actually HMRC keep a close eye on PAYE and minimum wage, and obviously more recently we've had things like the furlough claims. And I imagine that there comes a point where a business says, well, actually, why don't we have an employment tax person as well? So I think that's probably what's happened generally. I think in my particular example of where I work, we've probably grown more rapidly than the most, simply because we've matched the growth of the business. But I do think there's probably a trend towards having more and more in-house tax people. I think the next trend that's coming is in-house tax technology people. And I've already seen this with one or two people that I know, where businesses have come to the conclusion now that the systems are so important to getting the tax right that you actually need a dedicated tax technology person in the tax team. And that's traditionally something that would have been outsourced to a consultancy or an accountancy practice. So I think it's only going in that direction.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And actually interesting as well to think actually that the next big thing for in-house people you think is going to be like tax technology people.
I think that's where you're going to, see a lot more roles being created.
Yeah, I think I'm quite bitter as an employment tax person, by the way, with regard to like the in-house stuff and maybe just how valued we are by tax professionals outside of our specialism. Because I think there's an assumption out there that what we do is easy and simple. And obviously I'm going to say this, but maybe you've now got enough experience to agree that actually employment taxes in itself is a very complicated area, particularly when you start bolting on expatriate stuff as well. So before I have risk of ranting on this for too long, I'll leave it at that.
I feel your pain, Jack. I feel your pain. I think that's probably the case sometimes with indirect taxes as well. There's an old saying, well, VAT, it's just 20%, isn't it?
Yeah, I've heard that one before plenty of times. So obviously now you've been at Entain for roughly 5 years or so. What do you think is kind of next for your in-house role then? You mentioned earlier that progression is really important to you. So kind of where do you see it going?
Well, I think as long as the business continues to get bigger and better, which it appears it's going to, then that will enable my role to continue to grow in the same way that it has in the last few years. And that's what's most important to me, because one of the reasons that I have stayed in this role and really enjoyed this role is that each year is much different to the last, because the business keeps changing. We're going into new markets, we're launching new products, we're bringing in new team members, we're bringing in new systems. All these kind of things keep it interesting and fresh, and they also mean that there is that opportunity to keep growing and developing, and having the sense that you're growing as a professional. And so I think for me, as long as the business stays on that trajectory, then that's where I see my future. I'm quite fortunate in that regard. I think there are probably, I mean, and maybe it's my personality that obviously that's what I strive for. I know that there will be people that would prefer to keep doing the tax return every month or quarter or year. And not have to worry about everything changing every 5 seconds, which is what happens at my place. But I'm someone that likes that change and that growth.
Yeah, I think that's an important point to highlight, actually, is you've kind of said it a few times throughout this, but an in-house tax role for one business is going to be very different to what it is for another one. So even if one in-house role isn't for you, maybe a different one is, and obviously vice versa.
Absolutely.
So the only important question that I would like to ask as well, just to get your kind of thoughts around this, is would you ever actually consider moving back to a practice role, do you think? Or do you see yourself now staying in industry for the rest of your career?
I wouldn't rule it out. And I think I wouldn't rule it out partly because I didn't originally think I would go in-house. So you never know what the future holds. And I also wouldn't rule it out because I did enjoy being in practice when I was doing it. I did like working with different clients, and I found it quite satisfying to be able to assist clients. I quite liked the learning and development structure that you had, particularly when I was in the Big Four. There was a lot of structured development. There was a lot of internal work that was done to produce good training courses, good training materials. And that's one of the things that people sometimes miss when they go in-house, is that unless you force it a bit more, you don't have the training structure just there around you. When I was in the Big Four, on a weekly or fortnightly basis, we would be reading new case law, debating it, presenting it to each other. We would have a flurry of internal alerts about new developments or opportunities or issues to discuss with clients. And I enjoyed all that. And so I certainly wouldn't rule out going back into practice, except I enjoy my current role so much that it would be quite a big leap. I'd have to be convinced that it was, one, going to be as enjoyable or as close to as enjoyable as my current role as possible, and two, that it would make sense in the context of my career. And so that point may come.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, just, I suppose, for my understanding, I'm curious here. So if you were to move to, say, the equivalent senior role in a big four now, would your salary be about the same, do you think? Or would one of them be considerably higher or lower than the other?
I don't think it would be miles off, is my feeling. It's tricky at the minute because, as you'll be aware, you know, there have been a lot of labour shortages, and the press has spent a lot of last year talking about labour shortages in areas like lorry driving or hospitality. But they're starting now, and there was an article in, I think, the FT just this week about labour shortages in professional services. And so I think salaries are starting to change a bit because of that. But having said that, in answer to your question, I don't think in the position that I'm in that I would find a significant difference. Where I probably would is if I went for a partner role in a large practice, that might be something that would make a big difference. But if I was to go into a director role in a large practice, then I don't think it would make too much difference.
Interesting, because I don't know if this is the right perception as well, but I've always thought, actually, if you were to have like an in-house head of tax role, like head of all taxes, would that be comparable with, say, the partner's salary, I want to call it, for Big Four, or would it be well off? I don't know, and I don't even know if you would know the answer to that.
I think it will massively depend on the business. You know, I've seen head of tax roles where, and you can look at this through setting job alerts on Google or LinkedIn, but I've seen roles advertised as a head of tax, which they're actually, you look at the salary and the expectations of roles and responsibility, and you realize that it's more like a tax manager sometimes, and that might be because it's a very small business. And so you've got to be careful with titles like head of tax, because head of tax in a small business might be like a manager in practice. Head of tax in a FTSE 100, like where I work, well, that is going to be much closer to a partner style role in terms of the amount of responsibility and therefore the remuneration.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's interesting to know. So for anyone that is actually considering having the move to an in-house role, what advice do you have for them?
The first one comes back to that point I was just making, which is you've got to think about what is the business and what is the team I'm joining, because there is no standard in-house role. So a tax manager in one business versus a tax manager in another could be completely different, because the business might be completely different in scale. The size of the tax team might be totally different. So that the first thing is you've got to have a feel for how does this compare to what you're used to. And for someone coming from a Big Four practice, for example, if you go in as into a tax role in a small business, it might be quite dramatically different. You might not have many people around you at all. You might even end up being the only tax person, and that will be a very different role indeed. Or you might just be the only tax person in your specialism, so the only indirect tax or employment tax or corporation tax person. And so you've got to think about that in terms of where are you in your career and what do you want out of the role? Because if you're someone who is, say, a manager in practice and you see yourself in the future being a senior manager or director or whatever the equivalent might be in-house, then you might not want to join an in-house role where you're going to be the only tax person and you might have limited opportunities to learn from another tax specialist. So you've got to think about things like that. Linked to that, I think you need to think about, well, what's the history of this tax team and what's the future of this tax team that I'm joining? So is it the case that the business has just decided it's setting up a tax team for the first time and I'm going to be joining at the start? Pros and cons to that, of course. Some of the pros might be that you have the opportunity to play a big role in shaping that tax function if there are plans to hire a number of tax specialists. Cons might be, well, actually, you're going in and there's no track record of a tax specialist in the business, and therefore you're going to have to spend more time actually helping the business acclimatize to having an in-house tax function. I think if you go into one of those roles where the business has not had a tax person before and you turn up as the first one, then you're going to have to convince or at least get to know lots of people in the business and say, well, actually, we have a tax person here now. So when you're entering into this transaction or signing that contract or thinking about making that change to the corporate structure, there's now a tax person to consult in it. And so pros and cons to that. I think I would also suggest that you need to think about the timing for a move in-house in terms of your own career path and your current grade. So do you want to go in-house as a manager or do you want to go in-house as a head of tax? And clearly, it will depend on your experience and where you've got to. So I'd be surprised if anyone who's currently a tax manager in practice suddenly is going to be a head of tax in a FTSE 100 business. And you need to think about that in terms of, well, once I go in-house, what does it mean for my career path in terms of, am I going to be able to stay in this business and grow over the coming years? Does it have the same hierarchy that you might get in the Big Four or another practice where I know I'm going to be able to progress at a certain rate? Am I concerned about the so-called dead man's shoes, this situation where there won't be progression unless the person above you leaves? And so there's all those things to think about, which might be a bit different to if you're going from one practice to another, because it's so different. And then I think, obviously it's been a recurring theme in our conversation, but the learning and development piece. What is the opportunity for training in this business that you're going into? Clearly, someone who is earlier in their career, this is probably an even more important consideration. And you may also consider whether or not there are opportunities to undertake further professional study in an in-house role. And it's unfortunately probably a bit less common to sit professional exams in-house than it is in practice. And I think that's simply because practices are used to taking lots of people and training them as accountants and tax specialists. And in-house teams are not as used to doing that. They're used to waiting for someone to get that training and development and that qualification in practice and then bring them in. But it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. We certainly do it in the team that I belong to. But if you're, say, someone who's just undertaken an accountancy qualification, ACA or ACCA or CIMA or whatever, and you want to be a tax specialist, and you want to sit your CTA, you should definitely be thinking about, well, will this in-house team support me to do that? And the support comes in various forms, of course. Is there someone else in the team that has been through that process and who can help me and mentor me? Will the business pay for my studies and my exam fees and so on? Will they give me the time off? Will they do anything on the job in terms of formal or structured training that will help me with my CTA qualification? And clearly, if you're in that position where you want to do your CTA and you haven't done it yet, and you're looking at a role where you think that might not be supported in-house, then I think that's probably going to make you think twice about whether that's the right move. And then I think, I speak to people from time to time in in-house roles where they just don't have the same learning and development opportunities. I mentioned, obviously, a minute ago, my experience in the Big Four, when there was a lot of training, people were forced to read case law and present it to other people. And that's great in terms of development. And there were all these regular alerts that were sent round with the latest breaking case law or ideas that could be taken to clients and so on. And you've got to think about whether those things are going to exist in that move as well, and whether you want them as well. And, you know, it all comes back, I think, Jack, to the fact that in-house roles are so different from one business to the next in all these dimensions. And so there's lots and lots to think about there. But what I would say is there are also some really, really great opportunities going in-house. You get to work with people and experience things in the right role that you just wouldn't in practice. And I mentioned earlier the opportunity to work with non-tax specialists, and you can learn so much from that. Or the opportunity to work on projects, maybe it's a corporate restructuring, maybe it's an acquisition, maybe it's the launch of a new product, or it's a system migration. When you get involved in those projects in-house, you can learn so much, and you might not get those opportunities necessarily in practice. And so there's lots to recommend it. If you can find the right in-house role, it can, I think, be a really valuable part of becoming a better tax professional. And I'm just thinking back to the question that you asked about, would I go back into practice? And I actually think that makes me think, you know, I think it's not uncommon these days for people to make the move in both directions, into in-house and back into practice and so on. And actually, if you're going to do that move, maybe having spent some time in-house is a pretty good thing to have done in terms of developing those different skills, but also, of course, developing better client relationship skills. Because one of the interesting things about being in-house is you get to be in charge of the advisors. And if you're in a business that uses a few different advisors, you get to discover which advisors are good and bad, or what qualities you like and don't like in an advisor. And those are things that you probably only learn from being in an in-house role, where you're the one instructing the advisors and where you have the choice of who you want to use as your advisor. And so it's great for getting that experience as well. And that could potentially make someone a much better practitioner if they do decide to return to client service in that way.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that, actually, because I've thought about it before. Obviously, when you're in practice, you think you're doing what your clients want. You think you're saying things that they want to hear, but you don't really 100% know unless they tell you. And what's the likelihood of them telling you that they're not interested in what you're saying? Most people just listen, don't they? And, you know, kind of agree that they think it's something they're interested in when really they're not. And when you're on the in-house side, you can actually know for certain, I suppose, what it's like on that side, which is always nice. It's a nice learning experience, isn't it? And you won't appreciate that properly if you don't sit on the in-house side, I don't think. So, good. So if people do want to learn a bit more about you or get in touch, Stephen, where's the best place for them to go?
Best thing is probably LinkedIn. I think my profile is public, and I don't mind if people want to drop me a message on there.
Perfect.
Show notes for this episode can be found at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP53. They include all the links mentioned throughout this episode, as well as a link to Stephen's LinkedIn profile. They also include contact details for getting in contact with James Howell at the Tax Recruitment Company. If you enjoy this episode, subscribe or sign up for email notifications to make sure you don't miss out on any future episodes. The emails will give you a brief summary of each episode, which are bi-weekly and are released on Mondays. You can subscribe at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/subscribe. But that's it for this episode. I hope you liked the episode and have taken away some useful points to help you to progress, develop, and improve your tax career. Until next time.